Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the
2007
NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I'm sorry, is that my cue to go? I just got blown up. I don't know what to do if you get blown up. Never been blown up off of my own show before. We welcome you.
Well, you weren't on your show at the time.
Oh, I see. So as a caller to the show previous to mine, I was blown up.
Correct.
Okay.
Oh, they were digging into your time.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, as long as I'm on, it's our time. But that's okay. It's all right. I know, we have a schedule to keep. You're the producer, you're the executive. We're just the mere, you know, cannon fodder around here in the Patriots machinery. I understand my place. We welcome you inside the playbook for a Thursday here as the Pats and the Washington Redskins get set to go on Sunday at 4:15 Eastern here at Gillette Stadium. Now, here's a couple of thoughts for you. First of all, right off the bat on Thursday, we do ask for your predictions for the score, for the final score. Didn't get too many takers last week, and obviously I can understand why. It was lopsided. It probably was just an exercise in futility. There were a couple of joke ones like, you know, 85 to nothing and all that kind of stuff, and that's fine. But I have to admit, I spent most of the afternoon, I spent about 20 minutes, 25 minutes tops, going through the chat that's currently ongoing on Redskins.com. I don't mean to drive you away. I'm not sure why you'd want to go, you know, read Redskins drivel anyway. But fact is that I mentioned this yesterday, and I think we've probably talked about this periodically, and I know the PFW guys have mentioned it. You know, in other circles, in other parts, in other teams, in other cities, you know, everybody thinks their team is the end-all, you know, to be-all to end-all. Everybody loves their team. Everybody expects their team to win every week. And so if that makes you delusional, well, then okay. If it makes you a homer, fine. Whatever. What it does make you is you're a fan. And fans root for their own team. They root for their own laundry. They root for their own colors. They root for their own players. I just got a particular kick out of I really did not see one intelligent post. And it's a little scary. And I guess maybe, you know, if you spend any time in chat rooms like that, then, you know, I question your overall level of intelligence anyway. You have to probably go on a site like that in order to, you know, feel a little better about yourself. I don't know. I mean, it's fun every now and then, but to live on it, I don't know. You got to get a clue first and foremost. I was waiting for one intelligent football comment, something to say that, you know, well, the Patriots receivers are this or that or... No, not one. Not a single one. It was all like, yeah, skins rule. Hail skins, 24-14. We won't go down. You know, the cowgirls are overrated, and they beat the cowgirls. You know, so I'm like, that's all it was. Frankly, I'm kind of with Fred. Maybe it's better that we bury these things anyway, because I'm not so sure what purpose they serve other than to, you know, attract, you know, fans. And I realize you have to do that. But if you're looking for intelligent football conversation, that's probably not where you want to go. Hopefully you'll go to more to a venue like this or through PFW. Sometimes that isn't saying very much. I realize that, but I just as a sort of an exercise, you know, just to be a little different, see what the other people are saying, see what the other fans are saying. Where's the other side coming from? Where do they base their reasoning? And the answer to that is they don't have any reasoning. They don't base it on squat. There's nothing there. It's vapid. It's empty. And so, you know, frankly, if you're a Redskins fan and you're listening to this program right now, I'm begging you, please show me an ounce of football intelligence, or I'm going to think that, you know, the 30 fans that were on that chat site short while ago are a representative of football fans that follow the Washington Redskins. And I really know deep down that that's not the case. That's just not the case, because as a Dallas Cowboy fan growing up my entire life, obviously the Redskins were the arch rival. I think the rivalry has lessened somewhat now that, you know, Tom Landry and George Allen are no longer a part of it, because that was part of the fun in that particular rivalry. But there was always a mutual respect. You hated them. You wanted them to get crushed every week, but you knew that they wouldn't. And when they won, you respected the fact that they won. And when Joe Gibbs was head coach of this Redskins team his first time around, in building his Hall of Fame resume, it was a team that was built on toughness, on precision, on execution, on, I mean, a lot of the, there's a lot of similarities, I think, between the Joe Gibbs teams, you know, during his first time around the league, and what the Patriots are right now. I think there are a lot of similarities. And to that end, that's why I guess I'm disappointed in seeing the absolute numbskulls that were chatting up on their website. And I'm just like, I wanted one shred of intelligent football conversation. Please, somebody even, you know, say that, you know, Randy Moss is a good receiver. We didn't even get that. I was just totally and completely floored. So that kind of got me off and running today. Webradio at patriots.com is, of course, the email address. Webradio at patriots.com. If you want to call into the program, you certainly can at 508-543-7482. 508-543-7482. That's how you get onto the program. In addition to your score, your final score, I want you to predict the final score again, because I do expect this one to not be quite what it was with Miami. I think we do have to give at least, even if their football fans aren't intelligent, I think are not intelligent, or at least a certain faction of them are not. I think we have to give the Redskin football team credit where credit's due for being 4-2. They could easily be 6-0. They don't really have a juggernaut offense. They have a better than average, if not upper tier, upper echelon defense in the NFL. And I think that perhaps is, as we've been talking about already this week, that's going to be the key to Sunday's game, is to really whether or not, A, Washington's defense can finally be a defense to slow the Patriots down. We have yet to see one thus far. The Cowboys are, you know, were decent. Not great, decent. A lot of speed on defense. So that's one thing. This may be the best overall defense. You could certainly make that argument, I think, that the Patriots will face to this point in time this year. It's possible. Number one. But number two, I think the biggest thing here is whether or not the Patriots defense, or excuse me, the Redskins offense can move on the Patriots defense. That seems to me to be a bigger key. I mean, it may be one thing to slow down or even shut down the Patriots' offense, but then you still have to find a way to score some points yourself. And right now, I'm not looking at it. I'm not seeing it. I got an email a short while ago from a fan who actually sent a nice little note. This is from Matt in New York, who says that there was a quote, I guess. I don't know where the quote came from. Oh, it came from the Washington Post. I guess it was today. It may have been yesterday because I haven't had a chance to check the link. But he pulled out the quote from Clinton Portis. And Portis's quote, who, of course, is the running back for the Redskins, Portis's quote is, quote, talent-wise, I think we are the most talented team in the NFL, Portis said. When it comes to talent, I think we've got more talent than anybody, including the Patriots. You look at the receiving core they put together, I think our receiving core is just as talented. And then Matt writes, thanks, Portis. Take the over. Well, first of all, I'll explain this. Consider the source. Clinton Portis has been known in the past for, you know, shooting his mouth off, number one. Number two, frankly, it doesn't surprise me that anybody on that Washington team wouldn't defend their own guys. I mean, you're not going to say, oh, yeah, their guys are better than ours. You're not going to get that answer from a player. You're not going to get that answer from a coach. You're not going to get that answer from anybody in Washington. Certainly not the knucklehead fans. I think, you know, the issue here is that you look at the receiving core they put together, I think our receiving core is just as talented. I think that's a fair statement, actually. I mean, based on his opinion, of course. But his first part is, talent-wise, I think we're the most talented team in the NFL. Well, based on what? You've lost a couple of games. Patriots and Colts have not. So it's a little hard to put any credibility behind that just yet. He says, when it comes to talent, I think we've got more talent than anybody, including the Patriots. Well, that may be. So my question, my follow-up to that would be, well, why haven't you shown it? Maybe they'll get a chance to show it this weekend. I don't know. The odds makers seem to think, you know, with the Patriots still a 17-point favorite, the odds makers seem to think that they're not capable. So I want you to kind of keep all of this in mind when you select the final score, when you predict it, when you tell me what you think the score of Sunday's game will be, and whether or not you think that it will be actually closer than the 17-point margin, as the odds makers currently are saying it will be, or whether or not you think it will be wider than that 17-point margin. I have to admit, I'm kind of like Fred in the fact that my initial inclination this week was to take, you know, take the visitors, take them with the points. Obviously, I think the Patriots will still win the game, but to slide toward the other way in terms of the point spread. That's my initial inclination. I'll be quite honest with you. I have not made a choice on that just yet. I think it's borderline. I'm thinking right at 34-17 is probably a good way to go, a good place to start out with score wise. And then I'm thinking, well, I'm not so sure that the Redskins are just going to score 17. And I'll give the Redskins defense a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and say that they can hold the Patriots to 34. So far, nobody's held the Patriots to less than that this year, which is why I found some of the score predictions from some of the chuckleheads on the Redskins.com chat site to be rather amusing. 24-14, 14-3. What, are you kidding me? What gives anybody reason to think they're going to hold the Patriots to 3 touchdowns less than what they've averaged? That's you know, if they would have the best defense in the NFL and maybe the best defense since the 85 Bears if they really were going to hold the Patriots down to that kind of a point margin. Now, who knows? Anything can happen in the game of football. Maybe the Patriots turn the ball over 5 times. I don't know. I suppose anything could happen. But based on what we've seen thus far, it's a little far-fetched to think that it will happen. So just based on what we know, I just say I was a little taken aback by, you know, just the homerism that was shown. I mean, we're trying to present a balanced point of view here. Do we root for the Pats? Well, sure, it's better for us. It's better for everybody. But, you know, when the Patriots, you know, don't play well, we say it. They don't play well. When the Patriots don't have an edge in a matchup, we say it. They don't have an edge in this matchup. And when we pick against the Patriots, and you know the PFW guys have done that in the past, we do that. We pick against them. We select against them. We've done that on this show on Thursdays when we, you know, do our picks. You know, and Russell Baxter's done it. I've done it. You know, fans have called in. You know, when you've emailed your scores in, several of you have picked against the Patriots whenever you thought it was an appropriate week to do so. So it's not like this Patriots team has been invincible for any amount of time longer than what, the last 7 weeks. I'm not sure that we've had anybody select against the Patriots yet this season, to be quite honest with you. I'm not sure that we have. I think everybody's pretty much picked the Patriots from week one. But, you know, I suppose there is a first time for everything. Maybe that will be this week. Maybe that will be next week when the Colts game comes up. You know, we've done our best to try to stay somewhat, I guess, locked and loaded in on this week's game for this week without having to worry too much about what's going on next week just yet. Even had a Colts fan email us here in the program yesterday just begging us, if not outright taunting us, to go ahead and start talking about the Colts in hopes that that would cause the Patriots to lose some sort of focus. I don't know. We can do that. That doesn't mean the guys down the hallway are going to do that at all, right? Or the ones that are, you know, out practicing, what have you. Yeah, it's certainly going to set up to be a Titan matchup, no doubt. I'm personally going to root for the Colts to win this week. I want that, and I'm sure that you are too. So in that regard, I would ask you as well, as a part of your email today, are you rooting for the Colts to win? Is there anybody out there that does not want them to win? So I need your final score, your prediction for Sunday with the Washington Redskins, and are you also rooting for the Colts to win? Or are you one of those fans that just, you know, hey, an opponent is an opponent. I could care less what happens, and especially the Colts, because now they're become really our arch rivals, especially in the AFC. And, you know, I want them to get beat every time out. You know, in other words, my two favorite teams are the Patriots and whoever plays the Colts. That's what I want to know. If you're in that particular corner, if you're in that camp, that's fine. You certainly have a right to be that way. I share your opinion in some other sports, you know, and other teams that I root for. I feel that way a lot of the ways, but I don't know if I feel that way in this particular fashion, so that's why I'm asking you the question, and I'm hopeful that you will participate today via email, webradio@patriots.com, and by telephone, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. We have mentioned, of course, that this is just the eighth time in regular season NFL history since the Patriots and the Redskins have existed that they have played each other during the regular season. Just seven previous meetings between these teams. And the Redskins have won six of the previous seven. The only win by the Patriots came back in their first ever meeting back in 1972. And that was on October the 1st of 72. It was at then-named Schaefer Stadium. And it was a one-point, 24-23 win by the Pats over the Redskins that afternoon. Since that time, the Patriots have played four separate times since that time in Foxborough. And they have lost 16-14. They've lost 26-10. They've lost 25-10. And the most recent appearance by the Redskins in Foxborough was on October the 13th of 1996, and that was a 27-22 win by the Redskins at Foxborough Stadium. Last time these two teams played each other was 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, four seasons ago, in 2003, September the 28th of 03. And that was when Steve Spurrier, again, was still coaching the Redskins, and it was a 20-17 win for Washington at FedEx Field. The Patriots have only played twice, only played two times in Washington, D.C. against the Redskins and lost them both. And you probably have been made aware of this already this week, but I'll back it up here by saying that the Redskins are the only franchise amongst the other 31 teams in the National Football League, not counting the Patriots, of course, that Tom Brady does not have a win against. The only one. The only team he has never defeated as a quarterback is Washington. So when you couple that with the fact the Patriots haven't beaten the Redskins in 35 calendar years since 1972, I'm sure that that's something that has probably, you know, made its way through the locker room. In fact, I know they've talked about it because Mike Vrabel was specifically asked that question again yesterday in the locker room conversation. So thought it was a sort of a unique fact. Brady even mentioned it a bit in his conversation that we had here on the program yesterday. So, you know, while I don't think those guys pay a lot of attention to that kind of stuff, I think that maybe that it has been brought up. Hey, it's been too long. Now, even though we know that this is just another win, but we need to, you know, make sure we buckle down here and get this W. It's been a long time, and we don't want this held over our heads. We want nothing held over our heads. We don't want to leave anything to chance at all. And this is how you go about doing it. That should in itself be focus enough for this football team week to week. If you ever wonder about individual week focus and whether or not they actually do sometimes look ahead on the calendar, well, it's these little things like, you know, having not beaten the team in 35 years and Tom Brady never having beaten this team before and, you know, all that kind of stuff. If you look at these little things, believe you me, they all add up. They're all talked about. They're either in the locker room or they're in somebody's individual brain. You know, I mean, you would have had to have been on that 2003 team to have even played Washington, talking about the current Patriots now. So anybody that was on the 2003 team, they haven't beaten Washington. Yeah, we looked at the current Patriots roster. We go up and down, and I'm sure there aren't too many guys on there that have ever beaten Washington. Unless, of course, they were, you know, spent part of their career in the NFC. Maybe a Dante Stallworth. But other than that, not too many guys there have beaten Washington. So I think that's reason enough to stay focused. And also the numbers, as we talked about, how the Washington defense is pretty rock solid. They're third in the NFL in points allowed per game at 14.7 per game. Patriots are 10th in the league in points allowed at 17 points per game. Redskins are fifth in the NFL in total defensive yards allowed. They're giving up 277 yards a game of total offense. The Patriots are just ahead of them. Fourth, 275 yards per game. The Redskins are fifth in the NFL in rush defense, giving up just under 81 yards per game. Patriots are ninth. They give up just under 93 yards per game on the ground. Pass defense, also rock solid. Redskins are eighth in the NFL in pass defense. They've given up 196 yards per game through the air. Patriots are fourth in pass defense at 182. So you can see the Redskins obviously have a very comparable defense. In total yards allowed, they're just behind the Pats. In points allowed, they're ahead of the Patriots. At a little better clip. They've only allowed 9 touchdowns in 6 games overall, 8 of them by the defense, Patriots, conversely, have allowed 15 touchdowns thus far this season. And they're pretty close in third down percentage. Their defense allowing opponents to convert on third down 32% of the time, while the Patriots on third down defense, one of the league's best at 30% conversion. So now you get a little bit clearer picture. If you haven't already seen it, you get a little clearer picture that the Redskins defense does provide for some challenge. And it's because of those numbers, and I'm sure what the guys have seen on videotape and through their film study this week, that I'm sure that they probably don't need any extra motivation. And they probably don't need any extra convincing that the Redskins are certainly capable and worthy of sticking around, if not outright winning the football game on Sunday. So in this regard, that's, again, part of the reason why I ask you to give me your thoughts on not only the final score, predict the final score of the game, but then whether or not you'll be rooting for the Colts as well on Sunday. Matt in Quincy says, this game worries me a little bit because I believe that Sean Taylor and Laron Landry will go out of their way to hit or hurt the Patriots receivers. I'm not saying the receivers won't get their catches, because I think they will, but I believe after this week and going forward, the Pats will start relying on their depth, Chad Jackson, maybe Troy Brown, so forth. This could be the start of the receivers getting dinged up. Yeah, we talked about this a little yesterday, Matt, in how to defense the Patriots and how, you know, how you might be able to take something away, because they've got so many things, you know, that they do so well on offense right now. You have to focus on taking something away in order to have a chance to slow them down. And based on what I was able to read, and I got some opinions from some people whose opinions I respect greatly in the business who cover it, Adam Schefter from NFL Network for one, Vic Carucci from NFL.com for another. And in their conversations with a couple of AFC general managers, the general thought process is that you do to the Patriots what they historically have done to teams in the past. You muscle up on their receivers. Bang them at the line. Do exactly to them the Patriots, you know, that had Bill Polian had, you know, was screaming to the NFL that the Patriots are doing to his receivers. Check them hard at the line. Be physical with them. Make them pay when they go over the middle. Pound them into the ground. Try to take away the middle so you can focus your coverage on the edges, on the deep routes. And again, as you notice, Washington defensively will play a little bit more of an umbrella-type zone. They're not going to let a whole lot get over the top. Even though the Patriots may take a couple of long stabs down the field, and quite frankly, when you have some of the talent that they have, you'd be foolish not to take a shot at it. But I think that's exactly what the Redskins want the Patriots to do, because they're going to be equipped for that. The key here is to find something up underneath, to bust a seam, maybe to get one of those, you know, Dante Stallworth 360-degree moves, and a couple of missed tackles, and boom, he's in the end zone, like the first score last week against Miami. That's the key here. And part of the reason that that's taken away right now is because you don't have the threat up the middle in a guy like Benjamin Watson if he doesn't return to the field, which it doesn't look likely. So you have a guy like Wes Welker who's been able to sub. And again, if I am the Redskins, knowing that you just may not be able to take away a guy like Moss because of some of the unbelievable plays he's made, maybe you have to give him a play or two, I'm going to pound on Wes Welker. I'm going to absolutely pound on him, and I'm going to try to take him out of the game. I'm going to make somebody else beat me. Even if it's Moss, I'm going to make them go over the top and hope that our coverage is good enough to where they might get one or two, but you're not going to burn us more than that. Maybe Moss has a 100-yard day, but the key here is to not let Welker have the same, to not let Stallworth have the same. Take away the middle of the field on defense. And if you can do that, then you might have a chance. You hope that you get a couple of breaks. You hope that you get a couple of bad passes. You hope that the Patriots are not completely well in their rushing offense and that they stay dinged up there, or they're not as effective with a few less healthy bodies there. And so you hope. And again, you're hinging yourselves on a lot of hope, but you hope that you know, you can stick around if you take away one thing. And frankly, I'm thinking that Welker may be the one option that you turn to. So we'll find out if indeed that Joe Gibbs and company are thinking the same way. If indeed that might be a focal point for them to look at in trying to take this trying to take the defense away. So I think that that's certainly one of the ways that Washington could be looking at things going into the game on Sunday. Redskins obviously are this is their first regular season appearance physically at Gillette Stadium. So they are now the 26th different opponent to travel to the Patriots facility. The only teams that have not appeared in a regular season or playoff game at Gillette are all NFC teams, obviously. Arizona, Atlanta, Carolina, Philadelphia, St. Louis. Those are the teams that have not been there. Obviously, Philadelphia will change things when they play in another month here in Foxborough. But to this point in time, those are the five teams that have never been here. Redskins, of course, well, now technically the Redskins have been here. They played here in a preseason game year before last. And the Patriots, by the way, have dominated in preseason with the Redskins. In fact, the Redskins, I think they've played like, I think I saw the number earlier this week, I think like 23 times in the preseason. The Patriots have like an 18-5 lead in preseason games. Obviously, that means nothing. But that still means that very few players on the Washington side of the football will have ever been here for a game that actually means something. I don't know what that means in the overall scheme of things. Again, it's just kind of fact here. So that's what we're looking at going into the matchup. I'd like to kind of know how you feel everything is going to shape up along those lines with the scores and with rooting for the Colts and anything else that's on your mind. Other questions, obviously, it is open and available to you, webradio at patriots.com and 508-543-7482. All right, getting to again today, we'll hear from Pete Kendall of the Redskins, former BC product, still lives, I believe, here in Boston or in the Boston area. We'll have locker room conversation from the Patriots. Russell Baxter will join us coming up here in about 10 to 15 minutes, as he normally does on Thursdays, Patriots head coach Bill Belichick. And we'll take a timeout, come back and read some of your emails, get to Russell Baxter, and get to you right here inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac-A-Tack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac-A-Tack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday. The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season. Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren?
What it say?
Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardians poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autograph poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelette Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8:20 to 9:30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drive to Forum, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England!
England.
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your ticks.
And get the Revolution.
Revolution.
If you ever plan to motor west,
we're dialing it back a little bit now, aren't we?
My way, take the highway there.
Good stuff. Good music. Now I'm starting to show my age a little bit. A little swing. Always a little swing right here inside the playbook. We try to do what we can. Route 66. Is that how many points the Patriots are going to score this week? I don't know.
I should have saved it for Russell.
Yeah, that would have been a good number to save for Russell, huh? Webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address. Of course, yesterday, Richard Seymour returned to practice with the Patriots for the first time this season. So he's off the PUP. The Patriots now have 20 days at least to decide what they're going to do with him. I don't know whether or not he'll actually see action this week. I would think it would be highly unlikely. But then again, with this team, you really never truly know what's coming. Suffice it to say, they've got 20 days still left to decide whether or not he can play, whether or not he's got to go on season-ending injured reserve. So that's still the case. Nothing else new where Troy Brown is concerned. But that was the big news, and that was other than of course the fact that the World Series Game 1 was last night and the Red Sox romped. That was the other thing I was going to ask you about today. That was it, because I remember I talked about this on yesterday's program. You get so focused on football, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees here. Are you rooting for the Red Sox? Are you rooting for the Red Sox? If you're a Patriots fan, does that automatically mean you're a Red Sox fan? I think we actually talked about this during the 2004 World Series run when the Red Sox were going through it for the first time. And, of course, everybody was a huge Red Sox fan because it had been the first time in 86 years for them to win. And it was the first time in what was it, almost 20 years, 17 years, 18 years that they'd even been in a World Series. So, that's what I wanted to ask you. Thank you for reminding myself, John. Are you rooting for the Boston Red Sox? Are you interested at all in the World Series? In addition to your score prediction for Sunday's game with Washington, and whether or not you're rooting for the Colts, who are playing at Carolina this weekend. So see, you've got a multi-pronged response to go to today. And you can choose all three to respond to, or you can choose any one of those three to respond to. Just we don't need complacency and we don't need idiocy like we saw earlier on the Redskins chat site. So there you go, webradio@patriots.com. I'm just going to assume, if you're a Patriots fan, that you're probably a New England fan overall and that you probably are thereby a Red Sox fan. But I know that many of you living outside of New England or outside of the greater Boston area who come to Patriots Playbook and Patriots.com Radio for your Patriots fix since you can't get it in your local market, I'm going to assume that maybe you have also local allegiances, to the teams that are in your area. And if that's the case, fine. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no reason to be critical or to criticize you for that. I'm just curious. I want to know if you're a Patriots fan, does it automatically mean that you're also a Red Sox fan? So if you care to answer that one, please do so. With Seymour's return to practice, the Redskins also had some returnees to the practice field this week that after having been out for a while, center Casey Rabach, linebacker Marcus Washington were back in practice yesterday in particular. And I guess the latest from Redskins reports is that the Washington team will be as close to full strength for this Sunday's game as maybe they've been since the opening week of the season. So over the last 7 weeks, anyway, they've already had their bye week. They're 4-2 coming in. Rock Cartwright had a quadriceps injury on a kickoff return run in last week's game against Arizona. So he's apparently still sore. A decision has not yet obviously been made on whether or not he will go definitively. If that's the case, if he doesn't go, then Liddell Betts and James Thrash will return kickoffs for the Redskins on Sunday. Raybach missed last Sunday's game against Arizona because of a groin injury. Let's see if anybody else will be able to play. Nope, I guess that's it. Fred Smoot and Carlos Rogers were limited in practice yesterday for the Redskins. Smoot's fighting through a hamstring injury. Rogers has a sprained knee. But other than that, there was really nobody else that was significantly dinged up for the Redskins. So, again, the report is that they're probably as healthy as they've been maybe since the opening week of the season. So I guess that's a step in the right direction for the Redskins. The Patriots are close to being the same way, but then again, we don't know the extent of the injury to, or at least the availability to a guy like Benjamin Watson for this week. We are relatively certain that Seymour won't get back out there this week, but at least it's a step back in the right direction that he has returned to practice and returned to the field to begin working out and trying to get back into some, shall we say, football shape. And obviously, Sammy Morris is still going to be out for two or three more weeks at least, and who knows how much longer beyond that. There are some nicks there. And you have to wonder, and some fans have already brought this up via email, that quite frankly, maybe they're holding on to a guy like Troy Brown for a bit as long as they can, because when receivers do get dinged up, and I think that's where teams are going to go defensively, they're going to start trying to pound on the Patriot receivers in an effort to try to slow them down somewhat, then frankly, that's when you're going to need the depth that you have on this roster and the quality of that depth, being ready to step in. Started to see that a little bit already with Dante Stallworth getting a few more opportunities to catch balls with teams doubling up on Randy Moss, even though he still made some unbelievable plays in his own right. But Stallworth is the beneficiary of that double coverage because he's being single covered. Obviously, Wes Welker is the beneficiary of teams looking at Moss because he's largely single covered. I'm thinking the other way around. I'm thinking that maybe one or two of those other guys, in particular Welker, maybe they're going to get some double looks as well, in an effort to be taken out of the game and make somebody else beat you. Now, that may very well happen. It's sort of like, choosing your poison, picking your poison here. Which way do you want to be burnt? That's, I think all, part of it. But I certainly think that will end up being a factor at some point in time. Let's see if we can get a couple more emails in here, and then Russell will be joining us here in just a little bit on the program. Where did we leave off here? We left off, I believe, with this one. Here we go. Just wonder what you thought about the Pats picking up Sean Alexander. I know Belichick sometimes picks up the veteran guys that seem to be at the end of their run and revitalize them. Plus, I imagine Sean would like to get a Super Bowl ring before he retired, too. Anyway, this may be wishful thinking, seeing that I'm a Patriots fan from Alabama. Well, first of all, Alexander has to be available. I'm not sure what his contract status is because I don't have that, at my disposal immediately. I was under the impression that he had just re-signed, though, so it would have had to be via trade, and I frankly think that that's just very unlikely to ever occur, but I could be wrong. Patriots have, of course, in the past, picked up veterans that have been largely on the scrap heap or were not really, popular with other teams and been able to sort of convince them to come and play for maybe pennies on the dollar and a chance to sort of rehab their career and also win. I don't know that Sean Alexander falls in that particular category. I think he's still probably got some life left in his legs, but at least that's just my opinion. Alex in Somerville says, I can't listen live, so forgive any topic already covered. I went to FedEx Field a couple of weeks ago to watch the Skins play the Lions. Skins blew those guys out of the stadium. But I did get to learn something about the Redskins and what I saw to be some strengths and weaknesses. As far as strengths, Alex says, solid running game. The offensive line is very good at getting out and picking off defensive players in the second tier. They had some excellent holes that Portis, Betts, and even Sellers were able to exploit. The most consistently successful running play they ran was a strong sweep off of left tackle that picked up 5 or 10 yards a pop. He said the Skins have a very good pass rush that was penetrating the Lions' offensive line with ease. They made John Kitna very uncomfortable, had him running out of the pocket and into more pressure on every play. And the Skins' receivers also strong. Moss and Antoine Randall-El, both excellent, two of the quickest in the game. From my seats in the 100 section of the end zone, I had a great view of Randall-El making his cuts. And that man was so low to the ground and changing direction so quickly that I was amazed that he didn't break every pass for a touchdown. And very quickly here, their weaknesses, according to Alex. He says run defense fairly weak along the line. Pass coverage, he says, is suspect, even though we spent quite a bit of time here yesterday talking about their overall athleticism in the defensive secondary and how they're able to cover. And also says weaknesses, a young quarterback. Jason Campbell, chance to be very good in this league, but I saw him get rattled a few times against the Lions. The overall result of the game should not be any closer to that of the Cowboys game. I could see the score being similar, 40-something to 20-something. Excellent job, Alex. And a very thorough examination of the Washington Redskins. Well, since we brought Route 66 back into the equation, if we're talking numbers here, that means only one thing, Mr. Numbers, Russell Baxter. Russell, how are you?
I'm just great. I didn't realize you had Alex Trebek doing some analysis for you there.
Very well could have been, Alex. But I actually think that's a pretty good analysis of what the Redskins are bringing to the table. And this comes from a guy who was sitting in the 100 seats in the end zone at FedEx Field a couple of weeks ago to see the Skins play the Lions.
Well, you can never argue analysis with the human eye.
Right.
And, I didn't get to hear all of it and so on. Although the score sounded a little, given the way the Redskins like to play football and given the way the Patriots like to play football, maybe one half of that sounds. But I think you can see the Redskins getting ready to play the four corners of Dean Smith possibly in this game. We shall see. An intriguing matchup and made all the more intriguing by the fact that we are, perhaps 1 week away from an unprecedented 8-0 versus 7-0 matchup in the NFL. But these things have a way of being very, very interesting.
Yeah, I guess we might as well go ahead and start with the Patriots and Redskins, simply because I know that has permeated our discussion throughout the course of the week, and having one eye cocked toward what will be, happening potentially next week. And that's part of the reason why I'm asking fans today, while you're certainly concerned with this game, are you also going to pay attention to Indianapolis at Carolina? And frankly, are you rooting for the Colts to stay undefeated? I think that's a legitimate enough question. I think most fans are probably doing that. They're probably hoping the Colts stay unbeaten.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. Another question may be intriguing is, are the fans looking ahead to next week more than the players are? It's like I said, this could be an unprecedented matchup. And we came close once. We came very, very close. John, I know you'll remember this game. Going back to 1990, we had the 10-0 New York Giants and the 10-0 San Francisco 49ers. 2 weeks away from not only a clash, but a Monday Night Football clash in San Francisco. And lo and behold, the New York Giants went to Philadelphia and got tripped up badly by the Philadelphia Eagles in a game which I remember not so much for the score, but for an absolutely, and Pepper Johnson will certainly remember it, a block that Keith Byers put on Pepper Johnson, Keith Byers for the Eagles and linebacker Pepper Johnson, that was reverberating right along the sidelines. And lo and behold, the San Francisco 49ers, who had won 17 or 18 games in a row going back to the Super Bowl season, played a very dismal Los Angeles Rams team at home and lost to the Rams at home in Candlestick the week before that game. So one lost on the road, one lost at home, and lo and behold, we still had a 10-1 and versus 10-1 matchup, and at the time it finished 7-3, which at the time was the lowest scoring Monday night game in history. 49ers won at 7-3. Lo and behold, those teams did go back later that year and play in the NFC Championship game, and it took five Matt Barr field goals to dethrone the 49ers, and of course, the Giants went on and won Super Bowl 25 over the high-scoring Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, that's right.
And
good stuff.
Coordinator
Bill
Belichick.
Belichick, yeah.
Yes.
That's great. That's, in fact, people realize, and maybe people don't realize, but he was very much a part of those teams back in the early 90s and some very good defensive teams.
Well, the thing that makes Coach Belichick legacy so phenomenal is, I hear, once you've coached in this league for a long time and the discussion gets about being Hall of Fame and so on, to me, even after the Patriots won their first two Super Bowls, to me, Coach Belichick was a Hall of Famer because of his other work in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd been a member of two Super Bowl champion teams in New York with the Giants. He had also been a coordinator slash assistant coach with the Patriots team under Bill Parcells that got to the Super Bowl in 1996 and then his own championships. So his legacy throughout football is very impressive. You know, I hear so much about, you know, Dan Reeves, who never won a Super Bowl, but yet went there four times as a head coach. No one's been in more Super Bowls than Dan Reeves. He's been there as a player, an assistant, a coach, and a head coach, and involved in nine of them. And one day he'll get his chance to be in the Hall of Fame, one of a handful of coaches to win 200 games. But Bill Belichick's legacy in this league, it's, you know, there are a few people who can talk about the numerous achievements he has made as an assistant coach and a head coach when it comes to championship football.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Russell, did you see Clinton Portis's quote in the Washington Post? I don't know if it was yesterday or earlier today. He basically said that he believes that the Redskins are as talented as the Patriots. Certainly thinks that the wide receivers are as talented as the Patriots receivers. Now, to, you know, New England fans, that obviously is ludicrous. And my explanation to that was, well, you know, first of all, I know that Clinton Portis is somewhat known for flying off of the handle a bit, but I can understand why he would say that, because he's certainly not going to say, we're not as good as the other guys. No player is going to say that. What are your thoughts on his particular quote?
Well, you know, listen, what the Patriots are doing, there's a difference between performance and talent. You know, Coach Bill Parcells always talks about the fact that potential is nothing and performance is everything. And the Redskins do have talented wide receivers. They had, you know, Antoine Randall-El, who's a, you know, jack of all trades and master of many. But he still, to me, is more of a utility guy rather than a top line. I'm not saying he's not a talented receiver. He can do a lot of things a lot of other people can't do, including throw a football. You know, he's the only wide receiver ever to throw a touchdown pass in the Super Bowl. But you put him together with Santana Moss. Santana Moss has been to a Pro Bowl, had a dynamic season in 2005. But it's hard to put either one of those against the career accomplishments of a Randy Moss. I don't think there's any question about it. And now you throw in what Wes Welker has done the last, particularly the last couple of weeks. Wes Welker, I think, has 20 catches for 262 yards and four touchdowns in the last two games alone. He had 27 catches for 262 yards and one touchdown in the first five games. Mm. As Tom Brady gets more comfortable with him, Dante Stallworth scored a touchdown in three straight games. And now Randy Moss with 10 touchdowns in seven games, easily surpassing. He surpassed all his totals from last year with the Raiders in half as much time. And his legacy just continues to grow as well. While there could be a discussion of talent, it's hard to compare what the Patriots have already accomplished this year. Their three wide receivers have had great years, and we're not even halfway through it.
You know, some of the numbers are rather astronomical, and I have to admit, it does appear to be a little bit more like a pinball game than a football game, but that's...
Well, arena game. It almost looks like
arena
type
football
numbers. I mean, Tom Brady has thrown 27 touchdown passes, John. He threw 24 all of last year.
That's already ahead of schedule, right?
He's thrown two interceptions.
27-2 is a rather remarkable interception-touchdown ratio.
27-2 is a Canadian Football League blowout, is what it is, okay?
It's a good one.
That's exactly what it is. And, you know, he's averaging over 300 yards passing a game. He has thrown at least three touchdown passes every game he's played. He's thrown 11 touchdown passes in the last two games alone.
Right.
I mean, the numbers are astronomical.
Right, well,
and he is still remains one of the guys who spreads the ball around. He's thrown these 27 touchdown passes to seven different receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we stated and then corrected and made sure we had tightened up, he has now thrown more touchdown passes to Randy Moss than he has any other player in his brilliant career.
That's true.
In terms of one season.
Right, in terms of a single year. Correct. All right, well, the other number that I'm going to throw out at you here is 24-4. That number happens to be the Patriots' one-loss record against NFC teams since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
24-4.
And one of those losses
is to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So in that regard, where does that number change? You know, I mean, do the Redskins have an opportunity here on Sunday?
Well, I think they do, because I think every team in the National Football League, for the most part, unless you're having an absolutely forgettable season like the Miami Dolphins or the St. Louis Rams, has a chance. And it's the way you want to play the game, because this game is still played by human beings, not played by robots, not played by Madden system, not played by a cartridge you stick into a machine. It's still played by human beings. And that, to me, is one of the great things.
Right there.
One of the things, the great things about sports. Human beings do drop passes. Human beings do overthrow passes. Human beings miss tackles. Human beings get tired. So there's a lot of different factors that go into here. You know, if you remember that game that they lost at FedEx Field, and just in a quirk of things, the Washington Redskins have actually beaten the New England Patriots six straight times. Going back to, you know, the late 70s, that's just one of those quirky ones, just like the Carolina Panthers are 3-0 against the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
So, you know, history. But if you remember the last time they played, it was a game the Redskins won at FedEx Field 20-17. The head coach, right, of the Washington Redskins was?
Steve Spurrier.
And after that loss, the New England Patriots proceeded to rip off 21 straight wins. It was the last game they lost that season.
Right.
In 2003, went on and won their Super Bowl by running the table with 15 straight wins, won their first six games in 2004 before they lost to Pittsburgh, then only lost one more time after that and won a second straight Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So now Washington comes in. I'll tell you one of my favorite correlations about the game, John, is as the Patriots chase history, and not only Tom Brady, but obviously they scored 279 points in the first seven games. You're going to see two people on the field this weekend who know something about setting the points record. Now, of course, Randy Moss was on the 1998 Minnesota Vikings, which scored an NFL record 556 points in 1998.
Right.
Team eventually went 15-1 and lost the NFC Championship game to Atlanta.
Right.
The second most points scored in an NFL season were by the 1983 Washington Redskins, coached by
Joe Gibbs.
Now, are these Redskins capable of scoring 541 points? It doesn't appear so.
No.
They're a different type of a team. But they're a team that has gotten a lot better on defense than they were a year ago. And it's easy to point out how improved they are in terms of sacks and takeaways. When you go an entire season, John, with 12 takeaways in 16 games and 19 sacks in 16 games, you can only go up, and the Redskins have gone up in both of those categories because they had to. They couldn't be as dismal or non-aggressive as they were last year, but those were the really bad numbers on their defense this year, last year, hence winning only five games. They're already 4-2. They're a different style of Redskin team, but what else is new with Joe Gibbs? He's always found a way to win with different kinds of talent, and I think one of the best things the Redskins did this offseason was really do very little. I think they've gotten too far caught up with their ownership and so on, and being the team that always wins the offseason. In fact, if you think about it, it was actually the New England Patriots kind of had a Redskins type of offseason this year in terms of signing and trading for a lot of not necessarily high price but noted names. The Randy Mosses, the Dante Stallworth, the Adalys Thomas, and so on. That's the kind of offseason we've seen with the Redskins in the past.
But the Redskins' choices have obviously been,
that's why I used the word name. I didn't say talent.
Right.
I said name. Okay? Every year you would see the Redskins trade for Clinton Portis and get rid of Tramp Bailey and trade for Mark Brunell and bring in this person. And they had so many changes every year, I don't think their roster was ever settled. Now, this past year, they did this very little, just like they did 2 years ago when they made the playoffs. And I think having that stability for Joe Gibbs is a big reason. They look like a much improved football team. Plus, they're getting very solid play, not necessarily spectacular, but very solid play from that young quarterback, Jason Campbell, whose team, to me, has an awful lot of tools.
Most definitely. Do you feel like, though, that the Patriots end up continuing and they'll at least hold up their end of the bargain on Sunday the game next week?
Yes, I do. I absolutely do. This is one of those style games. Going into the season, I was a person who was concerned about New England's defense in terms of up the middle, the aged linebacker, the aged safety. I still think that might be a concern. You were able to see in the second half last week, even though they had the game well in hand, The Miami Dolphins had some success running the football.
They did.
And that's the only way you're really going to slow New England down. I think it's after seven games, it's been proven when New England's offense is on the field, they're going to score points.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one way for them not to score points, and that's to take them off the field. And that will be the attempt, I think, that Redskins try to do. It's not that they need Clinton Portis to run 20 yards here and 20 yards there. They need Clinton Portis to run 4-4-4.
Right.
Okay? Because 4-4-4 adds up to 12 yards. It adds
and
up
you're moving
to
the chains.
Down, and it adds up to killing clock.
Right.
You really got to kind of get – you got to try to get the New England Patriots to slow them down. NFL history tells us that no team or no quarterback's ever thrown a touchdown pass that counted from the sidelines. And that's what you have to do right now. They have proven that you can throw a short pass, turn it into a touchdown. You can throw balls up for grabs, turn it into a touchdown. They're on an unprecedented roll, and the quarterback's on an unprecedented roll, and there's only one way to try, and the key word is try, to stop them, and is that to put them on the sidelines.
It's a good analogy. Russell Baxter, of course, is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN, visiting with us as he does on Thursdays here inside Patriots Playbook. All right, well, we've taken a look now at the Skins and the Patriots. The Carolina Panthers are at home against those Indianapolis Colts. 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff on Sunday as well, Russell. And, you know, just from the outset and the look at it, you'd think, well, the Colts should probably win this game. But then you look a little closer. I mean, Carolina seems to be capable, even though I'm a little surprised they're 0-2 at home this year. So how does Carolina present a problem to the Colts?
Well, it's been an unusual year for the Panthers. You're right. They are 0-2 at home. They're 4-0 on the road.
Right.
So they are kind of bass-ackwards. We should call them the Panther Carolinas. And right now, there's, I think, still kind of debating on who is going to start for them at quarterback this week. Will it be David Carr? Or will it be former Patriot?
Vinny
Testaverde. Or former everything.
Yeah.
Vinny Testaverde, who came in a couple of weeks ago and off the couch and led them to a win at Arizona. In any case, this is a Carolina team that, different from last year, has not suffered all those big injuries they did on the offensive line. That absolutely devastated them last year. I think that was a reason they kind of fell apart last year, combined with Jake Delhomme making a couple crucial mistakes in early games and so on. But as much as the New England Patriots are on a roll, the Indianapolis Colts are playing with their own sense of confidence right now. And I think they sent, for anybody who kind of forgot that they were also undefeated, and to update our stat from last week, John, the mm-hmm. Indianapolis Colts are now the 46th team to open 6-0 or better during the
46th.
Super Bowl era.
46th. Wow.
So, that's again, we haven't gotten to the rarefied air yet. We'll get
no.
there in a couple of weeks, hopefully with one of these teams.
Right.
But they are playing with their own sense of confidence. They're playing with their own sense of offensive control. And I've made this analogy before, that them and the Patriots have kind of flip-flopped styles from 3 years ago. And, you know, we shall see how that works out in another week, regardless if they both win or both lose or one or wins or one loses. But I think defensively they're playing a lot, but they're playing more like they did in the playoffs last year than they did the regular season. Offensively, it hasn't seemed to matter that they've had injuries to Marvin Harrison or injuries to Joseph Addai. We'll just get Kent and Keith to run the ball into the end zone. They're using the running game more than the passing game. And that running game, I think, surprises people because it doesn't necessarily open gaping holes. It's like they're using it to control tempo.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own – it's just a different kind of Indianapolis Colts team. You're not seeing these awe-inspiring numbers by Peyton Manning right now. And I think Carolina's defense, which has not distributed – despite the big names up front, the Julius Peppers, the Mike Ruckers, and so on, I believe they have 4 sacks in 6 games. They've not exerted a lot of pressure on the quarterback. They're a little hot and cold on their defense. We saw Tampa Bay go in there a couple of weeks ago, albeit they were having – Carolina was just getting David Carr in there and so on after losing Delhomme.
Right.
I find even though they're playing at home, which right now has been a curse for the Carolina Panthers, I think Indianapolis is on its own mission, just like New England is on its own mission. And I just think Carolina is going to be hard-pressed to move the ball against that Colts defense.
I would agree. I also think that Indianapolis will find a way to win that and set up the Battle of Titans next week, but that will be a conversation for next week. Within the division this week, Russell, Buffalo playing at the Jets. Obviously, Buffalo got their second win of the year. A little bit of a surprise maybe last week, but they're playing at the Jets, and Chad Pennington has gotten that vote of confidence from Eric Mangini. I'm not sure why, but he's gotten it.
Well, is there any chance that maybe Eric Mangini could give his defense a vote of confidence? Because no one seems to talk about their problems. And, you know, this was a team last year that got into the playoffs, 10-6, managed to win down the stretch and get in. Last year, after a shaky start, they played very bend-but-don't-break defense. This year, their defense has done a disappearing act. John, last year, down the stretch, last eight games, they give up only 102 points, and their defensive unit only gave up 10 touchdowns in when they won six of their last eight games. Pretty impressive numbers.
Sure.
102 divided by eight is about 12 points a game.
Right.
10 offensive touchdowns in eight games. John, during their 1-6 start this year, they've given up 192 points, and their defensive unit alone has given up 20 touchdowns in seven
games. So if we're focusing on Chad Pennington, that may not be where the focus needs to be.
Well, that's exactly right. I think Chad Pennington's not in a position to carry a football team, and certainly not in a position to carry a football team that can't stop the opposition. And this is going to be a defense that looks like now that's probably going to be without Jonathan Vilmer for the rest of the season as well.
As the saying goes.
That being said, I like the New York Jets at least week.
Yeah.
To get a little revenge on Trent Edwards and the Bills. Maybe a little letdown for the Bills after their big win over Baltimore last week. You saw the Jets did move the ball last week on Cincinnati, and Buffalo's defense isn't much better than Cincinnati's. Just because they're at home, I like the Jets to finally, you know, call the dogs off for Chad Pennington. But I think you'll see Kellen Clemens later in the year, but not necessarily for the reasons that need be. I think we might be within the transition of Pennington's final, perhaps his final year with the New York Jets.
Miami Dolphins moved their home game this week to London, England, I guess, which is going to be something now that we're going to have to get used to over the next few years around the NFL with a team moving their game overseas and playing in another outside the United States venue. Now, the Giants are going to go over there and play them. Do you think the change of scenery will do the Dolphins any good?
Well, unless they can hide their quarterback behind Big Ben, and I don't mean Roethlisberger.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure. I mean, listen, Cleo Lemon last week had his issues. The Dolphins were able to run. He's actually been more productive as a runner than he is in a thrower this year. But again, we point to all their issues and what has happened to the once proud Miami defense. Where has it gone? You know, I don't want to say Joe DiMaggio, but they've given up 231 points, John, in seven games this year. They give up 283 all of last season. We saw what New England did to them last week. This was a team that had the defensive player in the year last year in Jason Taylor. They have nine sacks in seven games. They had 47 a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They've been, and talk about digging themselves holes, 127-66 outscored in the first half this year. Okay? Meanwhile, the Giants got off to the same start as the Miami Dolphins did, only Miami never has won. Yet one, in fact, their 0-7 starts are worse than the history of their team. Giants have certainly turned around, and they've done a complete about-face on their defense. First 2.5 games, not to know it's a weird stat to use, okay, but indulge me for a second, because perhaps the turning point of their season came in the second half of that game at Washington when they were way down or down and managed to rally and big goal line stand at the end of the game. First 10 quarters of the season allowed 13 touchdowns offensively, and 97 points. Last 18 quarters of play, 52 points and 4 offensive touchdowns. And the pass rush, I think we know about, 12 sacks, tying an NFL record against the Eagles. They lead the league with 27 sacks in 7 games. They had only 32 all of last year. They got the Trent Dilfer last week 6 times. O.C. Uemura got the defensive hat trick, the sack, the forced fumble, and the 75-yard return for a touchdown last week. They're playing with a lot of confidence. Now, let me say this. We've seen the New York Giants the last 3 or 4 years get off to these wonderful starts and then fade in the second half.
Right.
They should win this game, but I think people who are skeptics of the New York Giants will probably wait to see another month where they are sitting after 12 games rather where they're sitting after 8 games.
Yeah, because everybody remembers the 2-6 folding job they did at the halfway point last year.
And a couple years ago before that, it was I think they were same thing, 3-5. In 2005 they had a decent second half but then lost in the first round of the playoffs. They've not been able to sustain it for a full season, regardless of their first half performance. But they need to keep focused here. I think the idea of playing overseas, I think it's kind of a neat thing. I don't know if it's going to happen consistently and so on. And it's very, very, very smart of the NFL. Both these teams are off next week and should be, because this really will kind of turn, you and I fly out to the West Coast and it screws us up for a couple of days. Imagine going over to London and having to play in a football game. So we shall see. I kind of got to go with the New York Giants to extend the Miami Dolphins' misery. But by the way, I'm not ready to jump on the Miami Dolphins are going to go winless this year, even though it might be ironic considering it's the 25th anniversary year of their undefeated season. So
yeah, that would be a real kick, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be quite the full circle.
I guess I didn't even realize the pun I just said. Quite the real gym kick, I guess.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you very much.
Very nice.
The story out of San Diego this week has obviously been very, very upsetting to a lot of people, not only those who have family in San Diego and California, but obviously the NFL. It's a tough situation when you got fires raging out of control. Do you know, is there any late word as to what is going to happen with San Diego's home game?
Nothing yet, and we're expected to hear word today, John. If I'm just reading between the lines of things I've heard on the news and hearing our guys talk and so on, I get the feeling the game's still going to be in San Diego. It seems like things have kind of died down there, subsided a little. People are starting to return home. I'm sure it'll be, a rush in terms of, trying to get this all figured out, because they've been using Qualcomm Stadium, as a place of refuge and a rescue area for the fires and so on. And, it's simply amazing story out there to go on. I've gotten to know that area pretty well. I go out there every year and so on. And, just to hear all the news, I've got friends out there who've been affected by the blazes and so on. And it's very sad. It's far more important than any football game. But I get the feeling that they might be staying put. So
good. Well, I hope that does work out. Your game on Monday night, the ESPN Monday Night Football game, it actually looks like it might be a pretty good one. You got Green Bay playing at Denver. So you've got two quarterbacks, certainly with Brett Favre, we know what he can bring to the table. Jay Cutler continues to try to pull himself out of a struggle mode. Is there enough of a home field advantage for him and for the Broncos this week for them to make it two in a row?
Well, if we go by history, and you never know with history and so on, these teams have played 10 times. There was one tie, and the road team has lost all other 9. So the home team always seems to win this game. I don't know what that means. I know they played in the neutral site 10 years ago. It was a pretty entertaining game. To me, one of the best Super Bowls ever played.
Mm-hmm.
The Broncos ending the NFC's 13-game winning streak and beating the defending Super Bowl champion Green Bay Packers at Qualcomm Stadium in Super Bowl 32. Denver last week seemed revitalized after the 2-week layoff. They changed some things on defense. They had to hold on in the end, get a late field goal. All three of their wins, by the way, this year on the final play of the game by Jason Elam on a field goal.
Right.
But defensively, they seem like they still have some holes. But I don't know if Green Bay can take advantage, because Green Bay still is struggling to run the football. That's Denver's big Achilles heel. This, to me, could go either way. I think it'll be a turnover deciding game, and I know that's maybe a cop out and so on, but I think if Green Bay can force 3 or 4 turnovers from Denver, they're not going to necessarily need to move the football all that much. If Green Bay had a persistent running game, I would like their chances even more, but they've really been kind of nickel and dime their way on offense. When they played Washington a couple weeks ago, it took a Charles Woodson fumble return for them to beat the Redskins. Their offense didn't do much, and Brett's kind of gotten back into a little bit of the interception mode and so on. But if we go by recent Monday Night Football history, you kind of like the Packers' chances, John, because, on opening weekend, remember we had that doubleheader with Baltimore and Cincinnati and Arizona and San Francisco?
Sure.
Well, both home teams won that night. Well, the last 6 Monday Night Football games, 6 in a row, the road team has won every one of them. So I don't know what that means. But I know it's a streak that is currently going on.
Yeah, I have to feel that if Denver takes care of the football, Denver probably wins. But Green Bay is also, I think they're 2-0 away from home, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, their only loss is at the Sunday night game. They let it get away
at home, right?
Against the Bears and so on. It's really too bad. There's a couple missing components here would make things interesting. One would be Javon Walker, the former Packer, who was, you know, Brett Favre's big target for a couple of years. He's hurt right now, so he won't be playing for the Broncos. That's too bad. Champ Bailey didn't play last week. Hopefully he'll be back this week for the Broncos' sake, and that could be a neat little matchup with him and Donald Driver and so on. But so you got some missing components in here, but you know, you got to like what you see out of Jay Cutler. I know they've had an up-and-down year so far, but, boy, does he have a gun in terms of an arm. He can really zip it in there, and I think once he starts getting more and more comfortable, remember, he's only started, you know, 10 or 11 games. And once he gets more and more comfortable with the pro style of offense and the pro passing attack, I think he's going to be something to watch.
Russell, it's great to visit with you every Thursday. I look forward to our visits, and I look forward to getting some of that knowledge from you and from the guys at ESPN. And then when we see it actually appear on television on Monday night, it's really cool. It's kind of like, hey, he said that earlier in the week.
Yeah, hey, why not? You know, you guys are good on. To me, good info is good info. And
absolutely.
Next week we'll get to talk about. Are we going to talk about some game next week?
Yeah, I think we'll have a.
Or we'll next week we're just going to talk about every game except Colts Patriots.
Yeah, every game I think other than Colts Patriots next week almost be superfluous.
Well, you know what? Let's just hope, or, you know, just for fan wise and so on, and for those of us who love the game like you do and I do and so on, it would be just so super if they both teams can hold up their ends of the bargain this week and just have this great, great clash, because this really has become the preeminent rivalry in the National Football League. Just like in the mid '90s, we had Dallas and San Francisco. Trust me, it's no coincidence. And next week is week 9, John.
Yep.
It'll be the third year in a row that the Colts and the Patriots have met in the regular season on week 9.
I don't think I realized that, really.
Yes.
3 years in a row, week 9.
It's week 9. Week 9 2 years ago was on a Monday night. Week 9 last year was on a Sunday night. And week 9 this year. And I'm going to guess. We see the World Series will be over. It's college football and pro football. The NFL now has the stage pretty much to itself because college football still very important.
Right.
But, I mean, they're more than halfway through their season. Let's kick off the second half of the year, and let's kick it off with the preeminent rivalry in
Dallas,
the National Football
Indianapolis. Right. By the way, Red Sox or Rockies?
I don't know. The Red Sox looked like the Patriots last night.
They did a little, didn't they?
Yeah, they put a 13 spot and so on. I'd like to see it be a series. And so on, but you know, Boston's kind of been the best team in baseball this year. It's hard to believe they won't get it done. And when you see guys who have performances like all time performances, like a Josh Beckett is doing right now, it's one of those things you get to talk about 5 or 10 years down the road.
This is true, and we like sports events that allow us to talk about it on down the road.
And by the way, I know this is blasphemy, but you know, my wife's a Yankee fan, and so on. If you're a Yankee fan, it's okay to root for the Red Sox. It's all right. It means your league was the best league. That's
no,
all.
Can't do it.
Okay.
Can't do it.
Right.
Just like
well,
if you're a Sox
you
fan, you can't root for the
anymore.
Yankees.
That's why,
what's
you
that?
And I aren't that's why you and I aren't married anymore.
Divorce papers are on your desk. Thanks, Russell.
All right, John. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a great weekend. Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator. He joins us every Thursday here inside Patriots Playbook, and it's always great to get his knowledge on what's going on not only with the Patriots game that week, but also with the with some of the other key games from around the National Football League in this particular week. Hey, this is already week 8. My goodness. 17 weeks in the season, counting the bye week for everybody, and we're already hitting the halfway point. It's shocking.
8.
Yeah, 8 is exactly 8. Right. We're already there. Stunning. But next week will certainly be a huge week.
8.
Let's get a couple of, I think we may even have 8 or more emails. Let's get a couple more emails in. We'll take a break and we'll come back and get you inside the locker room and some other things that we have here inside the playbook for you on Thursday. This email comes from Mike in Vienna, Virginia, who says, John, as a lifetime resident of the Washington, D.C. area, I can personally tell you that the Redskins fans are delusional. We did open up the show today saying that.
Every year, all of them think the Redskins are going to win the Super Bowl. They make comments like, the last time the Redskins won a game where the temperature was 74 degrees with partly cloudy skies in early October, the Redskins won the Super Bowl. Therefore, the Redskins will win the Super Bowl this year. I spoke with one of my friends who is a Redskins fan, and he is convinced that the Redskins will hold the Patriots to 10 points. Are you kidding me? He also thinks the Redskins' offense is ready to break out this week. The Dolphins have a better chance of winning the rest of their games this season than the Redskins do of holding the Patriots' offense to 10 points, let alone the Redskins winning the game. Prediction, he says, Patriots win 38-10. Good stuff, Mike. Thank you for that. And I just thought that my inclination was that most everybody there was a little bit off the old rocker. So that doesn't surprise me in the least where it comes right down to it. Hey, John, Pats 31, Skins 17. I think the Redskins defense or special teams will score a touchdown on this one. Also, the Patriots have had a little bit of trouble stopping the run the last couple weeks, so I do believe the Skins' running game will move the ball enough for their offense to score 10 points. It's Brian in San Francisco. Brian, thank you for contributing. Let's see if we can squeeze one more in here before we get off to some other things. And there's still plenty of time for you, by the way. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address. We're looking for three things today. We're looking for your prediction for Sunday, as we normally do on Thursdays. Sox fan, just because you're a Patriots fan, or are you a Red Sox fan? Are you watching along, number two? And number three, are you also rooting for the Colts to win this week in order to set up the match of unbeatens next week? So there's some things for you to chew on and consider. Webradio@patriots.com. Let's see. Oh, Brian says, oops, I forgot. P.S., I'm rooting for the Colts as well this week to see the two undefeated teams. Very good, Brian. Thank you for that. All right, let's get a timeout. We'll come back and continue with some more emails. We've got some locker room interviews to get you into. I don't know. We'll come up with something else for you, I think, just so you can be the most knowledgeable Patriots fan at the water cooler right here inside the playbook.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
The New England Patriots set a franchise record for fewest points allowed during the 2007 season. Celebrate this historic milestone with a limited edition Goal Line Guardian poster exclusively from the New England Patriots, free. And if you think that's good, how about having it signed by two members of that record-setting defense, Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren? Take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer by making qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points, redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points card and free Goal Line Guardians poster autographed by Roosevelt Colvin and Ty Warren. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed poster limited to the first 200 with qualifying purchases. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelet Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelet Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'.
Playoff action is back in Foxborough. Once again, your New England Revolution have advanced to the MLS playoffs and are looking for a return trip to MLS Cup.
Drives it for him, and the goal! 1-0 Revs! What a huge tally for New England! Penguins.
Saturday, November 3rd at 7:30 p.m., Taylor Twellman, Pat Noonan, Matt Reese, and the rest of the Revs take to the field in Foxborough, and they want you there to cheer them on to victory.
Takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Revs! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet!
Individual tickets start at just $18, and significant discounts are available for groups of 20 or more. Bring your family or group, and don't miss a minute of this exciting playoff match at Gillette Stadium. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS. That's 1-877-GET-REVS to get your playoff ticks.
Get your kicks.
And get the Revolution.
The New England Revolution.
We roll along inside Patriots Playbook for Thursday. It's game week 8 for the Pats. They get set for the Washington Redskins, Gillette Stadium, Sunday afternoon, 4:15 Eastern Time. The kickoff yet again. My name is John Rook. Let's get another email here. This one comes from Alex, who says, I'm a Patriots fan, but I'm not a Red Sox fan. I'm not interested in the World Series either. I'm not a baseball fan. I'm a die-hard football fan. Well, that's why we asked the question, to find out if indeed, you know, just because you're a Patriots fan, are you also a Red Sox fan? Are you interested in the World Series? And then, of course, the other question of the day has to do with whether or not you're actually rooting for the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday to win at Carolina to set up the potential 7-0 versus 8-0 matchup next weekend in Indy between the Colts and the Patriots. John in Grand Junction, Colorado. I am a lifelong Pats, Sox, Celts, Bruins fan. Born and raised in Natick, I've lived in Colorado for many years now. I'll be at Saturday and Sunday's game with all my Red Sox gear on. He says, prediction for Sunday, Pats 35, Skins 17. There is no reason to think the Pats will not put at least 30 up on the Skins. And then he says, Red Sox in 5. My brother has tickets to Monday's game at Coors, so we can't have a sweep. I'm loving that. Hey, you know what? Nothing like brutal honesty.
I may have 6-7, so I need them to come back.
You have 6-7?
I may have 6-7.
Well, see, that's exactly what I was just getting ready to say. I also have a shot at going to 6-7 because I got a buddy of mine who has tickets, and he doesn't think he's going to be able to go. And so he said, I'll sell the tickets to you if the customer comes back. I got two. Two tickets. How many do you have?
Well, I'll have two.
See? All right, well, that makes two.
Well, if you had four, I would have bought the other two off you just to make sure I could have them.
So I'm a little bit flummoxed here. I'd love to see the Red Sox do well, but frankly, I'd love to see the Rockies win two so we can come back and have a game six. Because that way, then I get to go. I know my son feels that way. We sat here watching the game last night, and he also knows that, you know, there's a slim chance that we get these tickets. And so he's kind of like, Dad, you know, it's great that the Red Sox are winning, and it's awesome that they won 13-1 and all that kind of stuff, but you know, I kind of want the Rockies to win. I'm like, why? So we have a chance to go to the game. So I said, well, I certainly understand that. So we're a little bit perplexed here. But I guess if the Red Sox win and they win it in 4 or 5, well, hey, you know what? That's something already now in our lifetimes that, you know, in anybody else's lifetime they wouldn't have been able to see. I mean, winning two World Series in 4 years, that would be remarkable when you consider it was 86 years since they had won their previous one. So really, really very little to argue about if you're a Red Sox fan where that's concerned. Okay, as far as the Washington Redskins are concerned, anybody who spent any time looking up and down the rosters has seen the name of Pete Kendall. Kendall, of course, is a guy who's from New England. He's still got his Boston accent. He attended Boston College. He has played within the division, of course, of the AFC East for a number of years. And when he played with the New York Jets most recently over the last 3 years previous to this one. So he's familiar with the Pats. He's familiar with the AFC East. He's familiar with a lot of things. What he's not so familiar with, I guess, is the way things are going in Washington and the fact that Washington is having some success on the field this year. And if anybody has had his brain picked, I think, about, you know, what's going on with the Patriots, it's probably a guy like Pete Kendall who's on the offensive line for the Washington Redskins. So members of the Patriots media now in their conference call with Pete Kendall.
Hey, Pete, how you doing? It's Karen Curry again.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Pete. Hey, guys. You guys hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great.
So I guess you just can't get away from the Patriots, even though you're out of the division.
I guess not.
What does this Patriots team look like compared to the ones that you've been used to seeing with the Jets the last couple of years?
Well, defensively, they look pretty similar. They're playing very well, which I'm used to seeing on film. Teams are having a tough time scoring points. Certainly scoring as many points as their offense has been. That's proven impossible to this point, right?
Pete, how's the transition been to Washington?
I couldn't have asked for things to go any better than they have. I was able to find a place to live within a week of the trade. My family moved down. My kids are enrolled in school. So it's been great for me from a personal standpoint. The fact that we've been able to win a few games here and play decent football has been good as well.
So you're no more commuting, right? Everybody's all together?
Yeah, no. Finally get to be a full-time father and football player at the same time. It's been a while.
Were you disappointed the way it ended in New York? I know you sort of had a hand in getting yourself out of there, but that got kind of messy at times.
Yeah, it was not how I'll choose to look back on my time there. Certainly I won't dwell on how it ended. I was a little surprised that the ball got rolling the way it did, but once it got rolling, I think that the way it ultimately was going to end, similar to the way that it did.
Take any satisfaction in the fact that you're 4-2 and they're 1-6?
I just enjoy being 4-2 at this point. The fact that the Jets are 1-6 doesn't do anything for me. I still feel close to a lot of guys in that locker room, and I wish them well every week.
Are you surprised at all of how the bad blood between the Jets and the Patriots has escalated?
I'm not really aware too much of it now that I'm not there anymore, obviously. Like anybody who even remotely follows the game, I heard about Spygate, but as far as what went on beyond that, I don't really know.
Hey, Pete, Richard Seymour practiced today for the first time, which means there's a possibility that he could play this weekend. Can you sort of talk about what sort of challenges that presents for your defense if he does return?
For our offense?
Oh, your offense, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Richard's been all-pro how many times, and deservingly so. So anytime you get an all-pro caliber player back, it's a challenge for any offense. Richard's a unique guy. He is tall and as long-armed as he is, and also to be as athletic and heavy and strong, and he's the total package.
How, going up against him in the past, what's that been like for you?
It makes for some long days, that's for sure.
And are you guys practicing in preparation, assuming that he is going to be in there?
I wish we had more time. I could tell you everything we're doing in practice, but time's limited. I guess I can't really discuss much about that.
Okay, thank you.
You know, the Patriots have been sailing along here offensively pretty good. At times, you guys have struggled to put points on the board, especially in the second half. Can you put your finger on what the problem has been offensively at times this year for you guys?
I don't know. Ultimately, it just comes down to execution. You can talk about any number of factors. We've had some injuries, and we've had some bad things happen to us. But ultimately, it just comes down to the fact that other teams have executed better than us in the second half in a couple of our games.
You've had some injuries on the offensive line. How much has that affected the offense as a whole?
I'm not really sure how much has been pulled back because I don't know what the plan was before. I just sort of got there myself. But anytime, generally speaking, anytime you have injuries to any group, but particularly one like the offensive line that relies so much on chemistry and on spoken communication, it definitely makes it a tougher task.
The coaches this week, Joe came out and said he kind of regretted not being a little bit more, he said he was too conservative in the second half last week. What was your take on him publicly sort of blaming himself for that?
I mean, that's the type of guy that that coach is. He's won 3 Super Bowls. He's already in the Hall of Fame. It'd be quite easy for him just to sit and say nothing. And he probably would have been right to do nothing, because I don't think that it's fair to blame the coaches for what's happened. But I think that was an effort by Coach, certainly appreciated by me and the other guys, to try to deflect some of the criticism from us.
Was your heart in your throat last week with Neil Rackers lining up for that field goal?
Yeah, I mean, it was certainly disappointing that it even got to that, considering where we were with, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes left to play in the third quarter. But, you know, in this game, teams come back all the time. It just seems to be like, I guess, NBA basketball, or at least how it used to be. It always seems to come down to the last 2 minutes, and they always seem to take about 40 minutes to go.
Keeping an eye on your alma mater?
I have been trying to keep an eye on the Eagles. It's, they're playing not too far from here tomorrow night. I'm, unfortunately, not close enough, but should be a good game tomorrow night.
What, you know, in the past, I know you played the Patriots when they didn't have, you know, when they had Seymour in the line, but what's the toughest thing about playing the Patriots defense?
It's really, they're a difficult group to even prepare for, because so many of their guys are so versatile. They can give you so many different looks up front, and they can give you the same looks with different personnel, with just the match personnel. So just from an X and O standpoint, you're not really sure what you're going to get. And of course, their players are really good players as well. So when you couple good scheme with intelligent players who are interchangeable and also very good at what they do, it, I think you see the results, which is, you know, they make it hard on offense.
That is Pete Kendall, former Boston College Eagle, former member of the New York Jets on the offensive line.
From the space station, playing, apparently.
Yeah, no kidding. It sounded like he was in the International Space Station, didn't he? With the sound quality of that particular phone line when he was doing the interview with the Patriots media. But, of course, he's now a part of the Washington Redskins, and he will be on the field. Provided, I guess he can come back off the planet in time for Sunday at Gillette. Here's an interesting little tidbit passed on by Patriots PR this week, and I wasn't aware of this. I know that from time to time, you know, there are some numbers that, you know, numbers are numbers, but this one actually is a pretty cool number. 4 Patriot linebackers, current linebackers in New England, are among the top 7 active linebackers in terms of total career sacks in the NFL right now. Probably pick out a couple of them anyway. Junior Seau is 4th among active linebackers with 53 career sacks, number 4. Roosevelt Colvin is 6th with 50.5 career sacks. Mike Vrabel is 7th with 41 career sacks, and Adalis Thomas is 8th with 39 career sacks. Teddy Bruschi is just out of the top 10. He's 13th with 30.5 career sacks as well. The number 1 active linebacker in career sacks is former Patriot Willie McGinnis with 82 career sacks. I thought that was kind of interesting, but 4 of the top 7 are all current New England Patriots in terms of active sacks, which I think is pretty cool. Vrabel in particular proving to be certainly one of the NFL's most versatile players, as we've talked about several times, but he has made contributions certainly on the defensive end, but also on the offensive end as well. 9 career receptions, all of them resulting in touchdowns when the Patriots are in short yardage situations on the goal line. He has scored 1 touchdown already this season as well. Junior Seau has obviously done very well defensively with 3 career interceptions, a career high for him in a single season. Adalis Thomas, we've seen his particular speed, a 65-yarder against the Chargers for a touchdown. His 7th career pick, his 3rd career interception return for a touchdown. So he's been able to utilize that speed a little bit. So we have seen the Patriots linebackers, albeit they have been criticized for being maybe a little long in the tooth, they are still getting the job done this year. Guys like Rodney Harrison also continuing to contribute and contribute at a relatively high level. This week inside the locker room, got a couple of quick tidbits that we'd like to pass on to you from players that we've heard from this week as the preparations begin. as the preparation's begun, I should say, a couple of days ago, for the Washington Redskins coming up on Sunday. Mike Vrabel, Dan Copen on the offensive line, of course, has returned to play in the last couple of weeks, somewhat quietly, I might mention as well, since he came back to play after missing a week or two with Russ Hochstein filling in at center. But Dan Copen is back in there, so we heard from Dan this week. Matt Light, who will also be a part of our interviews, and Rodney Harrison. So Vrabel, Copen, Light, Harrison. Gary, do we have that?
We do.
Oh, cool. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. So Vrabel, Copen, Light, and Harrison inside the Patriots locker room.
I mean, we have to play, you know, we have to prepare for them like, you know, every other team. Obviously, we haven't played them. We played them last year in preseason. It's a drastically different team. But, you know, we'll prepare, you know, like we always do, and then be ready to go on Sunday.
Mike, it's not like you all need any extra motivation. You still haven't beaten this team 30 times.
You know, I'm sure that we'll play just as hard as for those guys that were playing in 1970 for the guys that are playing this week. So, I mean, 35 years, I mean, that's a long time not to beat someone. But, you know, we're gonna do what we can to get ready to win the game.
Mike, what is the key to improving red zone defense?
Well, I mean, I think it's recognition of the plays because they do hit a lot quicker. You don't have as much time if you make a mistake to get a guy for a 12-yard gain. It's a touchdown. You know, if you make a tackle on a 12-yard gain, usually in the red zone, they're going to be either in the end zone or real close to it and with a first down. So, you know, I think recognition and making that play right away as opposed to you know, giving them 6 or 8 yards on a play and then tight coverage and then, you know, good run defense, obviously.
Mike, I think this is the fifth new quarterback you guys have faced.
Do
you guys change your approach at all?
Well, I mean, I think we're aware of what the quarterback skills are as far as moving around in the pocket, you know, scrambling. You know, we would prepare, you know, as opposed to, say, Romo and, you know, Jason Campbell would probably be a little different. I mean, I think, you know, Jason's a bigger type quarterback that it can be mobile, but I think wants to throw from the pocket and has a, you know, an arm that can get the ball downfield.
Is it important to get after a quarterback like that early, one that you haven't faced before?
Well, I think any time that you can force a quarterback to, you know, feel some sort of pass rush as opposed to just to stand back there and wait his receivers out and let them run their deep routes, certainly we try to get pressure on every guy.
Like game one of the series, and I get messages like send of the socks.
Nah, good luck. I won't be up that late, but good luck.
Thanks, guys.
That game this Thursday.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they've played well all year, and you know, I've had a chance to watch a few games, and they look good. And you know, it's really exciting what Jags has brought to that program, and hopefully they continue going too.
Thanks.
Looking forward to Washington now as a team. Obviously, the big talk you guys have beaten in 35 years, but what is it about them that you notice that enables you guys to get back?
You know, they're good. You know, especially on defense, they got a lot of athletes, guys that are just flying around making plays. You know, they know what's expected of them in their system, and you know, they've proven it so far that, you know, they can play, and it's going to be a great challenge for us on Sunday.
Is there any look forward? I know you guys just look one game at a time, but obviously looking ahead, the Colts are coming up next.
No, I mean, guys in this locker room have been around too much where you can't overlook teams and opponents every week. It's just one of those things where every week it's a dogfight, and you know, we're expecting that on Sunday.
How much pride have you guys taken in the offensive line and keeping the sack totals low and giving the quarterbacks enough time to keep the interception total low?
I mean, that's our job. You know, sometimes it doesn't go as well as we'd like, but you know, there's always room for improvement, and you know, we just go out there every week, try and do what's asked of us, and try and, you know, keep him clean, give the running back lanes, and really try to do our job and do it well. And, you know, we're still working to get better. We know there's still room for improvement, and that's, you know, that's the way we do things around here.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, that's a total team effort. I mean, any time that you're, you know, having success throwing the ball, you got receivers getting open and the line blocking, And, you know, Tommy just making good decisions back there, not holding the ball. So, you know, it's not any one area. I think it's just everybody working well as an offensive unit.
Has it helped that you guys have had consistency along the line? I know you've had, you know, I think Stevens' position maybe had a little bit of rotation in there, but for the most part, you guys have had the same players.
Yeah, you know, it's good to have everybody healthy. I think, you know, it's good having guys that are experienced and know what to do out there. And you know, there's obviously a little luck involved there, too, so. You know, it's just, and I think the running game, being able to run the ball, obviously has an effect on that too. So,
how much extra preparation do you do when you know you're going up against, say, a Jason Taylor or a DeMarcus Ware, as opposed to another?
That's every week, but yeah, I mean, it doesn't change too much from week to week. So, you know, we all take the same approach every week, regardless of who we're playing, to get ourselves prepared and ready to go. You know, that part doesn't really change too much. Yeah. Is it working? Obviously, let's send this one back.
Hey, did you know London Fletcher could fly like he did? Did you see that highlight? That interception?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy's an amazing athlete, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, he's always in position to make plays, so.
Lonnie, you can appreciate great safety play. How good is Taylor and Landry for those guys?
Oh, Taylor is a phenomenal free safety. Can hit you. Can get to the ball, has tremendous range, very athletic, and he's playing probably the best football he's played since he's been a professional. And LeRon Landry, very physical, smart safety that came out of a great program. They complemented one another. He looks like it on film. I mean, he's fast, he's quick, he has tremendous vision. He runs hard, very powerful, it's underrated power, but very explosive, and he could take the ball all the way at any point in time. Well, just a lot of different formations, a lot of movement sets. But the main thing for us is just to get in our coverage and whatever defense we're playing, just play at 100 miles per hour and tackle well. I mean, it doesn't matter really what the offense will do. Just a matter of us doing what we have to do.
All the focus seems to be on that Indy game. Obviously, you're focusing on what's ahead right now, right? How do you stop not thinking about looking ahead to that game?
It's not a problem. We play Washington this week. Obviously, he's pretty athletic. I mean, he's a big guy. I don't think he's looking to really run much, but, I mean, he has that ability. So he can get outside the pocket. He can make things happen, like most of the quarterbacks in this league. So it's just a matter of us just containing him and doing our job and having our gap responsibilities. And if he runs, hit him.
Rodney, if there has been a problem with you guys defensively, it's been the red zone defense. How important is it to shut that part of the you guys are going up?
Well, I mean, red zone is scoring opportunities. Every time you stop them from scoring, you save yourself 4 points, realistically. So that's something that is always a point of emphasis. Back years ago when we were one of the top two or three teams in the league, we continue to focus on it as well as now. So that's something that we need to show up along with many other things.
Brian, obviously, NFC team, not a team you see a lot of. The quarters from the state of Denver, you did play against them a few times. Does that help you in preparing for them? Haven't played against him.
Well, you watch film, and I mean, he's the same back. He's fast. He's explosive, like I said before, and he has tremendous vision. So it's just a matter of us going out there, got responsibilities once again, tackling well, and having 11 guys to the ball.
Do you think that Bill Belichick, Coach Gibbs pulled up Coach Belichick this week? He said his team is the biggest underdog in sports history.
I don't know. I don't really care what that is about. I don't know. It's just a matter of us focusing on what we have to do, not worrying about what they're saying back there or what they're doing. Just focus on what we have to do and just do it well.
You faced a lot of good tight ends this year.
No
one this week in Chris Cooley. What type of challenge is he for that?
Same as every week. Same as Gates and all these other guys. They can run. They can catch. Very athletic. Can get open. Can block in the run game. Just these guys know how to get open, and when the ball is thrown, they catch it. They normally come down with it. So he presents the same challenge as Jason Witten and all other great tight ends we're going to face this year.
That was Patriots safety Rodney Harrison. Mike Vrabel, linebacker, leading it off, followed by Dan Copen from the offensive line, and Matt Light following Copen, and then wrap it up with Rodney Harrison inside the Patriots locker room for you this week. We'll wrap up the program in just a little bit with the Patriots head coach Bill Belichick and get you his thoughts from today here at Gillette Stadium as the Pats get set for the game on Sunday against the Washington Redskins. Another email to get to. This one comes from our friend Pratt, who lives in Washington, D.C. He says, John, I live in D.C., so the Skins are the home team for us, but I am a Pats fan. My prediction is that the Patriots win this game 40-20. Campbell is not experienced enough on offense, so they won't be able to score that many points. Our defense will have a good day against them, and I certainly think Asante Samuel will have 1 to 2 interceptions this week. The Redskins' defense is good. It may hold the Pats early, but then the Pats will turn it on full speed and cover the 17-point spread and win by at least 20. That seems to be the prevailing thought, to be honest with you, amongst Pats fans, Pratt. And again, thank you for the email. As always, it's good to hear from you. I kind of get the sense from most fans that that's the case. That while the Redskins may hold this thing somewhat close early, maybe halftime, maybe into the third quarter, that when you're talking getting into the late in the third, early in the fourth quarter, that's when some of the pedal is pushed to the metal and the Patriots are able to open it up just a little bit. Jimmy in Orlando says, although I agree with you that taking the middle of the field away may be a way to slow down the Patriots, I don't think it can be done. There is too much offense. Pats may need to go back to chipping away, but when the Skins come up, the Skins will get beat over the top. Their D will be spread out, and a back out of the outfield or a back out of the backfield will be an option. I think they will play pass and be primed for Lawrence or a Falka draw up the gut or a fake or a screen to Maroney or Falk. I also think Kyle Brady can have a game. We haven't seen a lot of our bread-and-butter plays from last year, so the list goes on. I'm more concerned about the weather. It's not a Brady day if it's raining, and I think your weather is rain in moving in this weekend. Jimmy says, Pats 37, Skins 17 with no rain. And he says Pats 27, Skins 24 with rain. So Jimmy thinks that the weather could be a factor, and I guess rain is still in the forecast for this weekend. Now, it's rained a little bit today. It's supposed to rain, I think, also on Saturday and possibly again for Sunday. So at least that's the forecast. Right now Friday looks clear, but obviously don't play on Fridays. So that's the latest. What's that, Gary?
No changes to the injury report.
No changes. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. So everything's the same from yesterday in terms of the participation on the injury report, and it will be posted on the website coming up here shortly. But if you go to the website now and you see yesterday's injury report, no changes from yesterday. This one comes from Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut. John, rather than give you just this game's prediction, I'm going to give you what I think will happen for the rest of the regular season based on the following observations and conditions. Okay, Diane, let's see. Step out. She says, if Brady and any two of receiving core consisting of Moss, Walker, Stallworth remain able to play, then the game scores are going to stay in the 30s to 40s for the Pats and 10 to 25 for the opponents, depending on the opponent's skill level and the desire of the Patriots' defense to stay in the game mentally, with one exception, the Colts. Colts game will be closer with them scoring 24 to 31, but the Patriots will still win by about 7 to 10. This will happen because of having a higher level of talent in most all positions in a team environment that is coached better than other teams. Diane says, a comment about Matt Cassel. I trust Belichick's judgment and what Brady says about him. My guess is that the play that was called that ended with the interception was probably not appropriate for his current skill level, but with experience, he will eventually be a good QB. All right, Diane, I thank you for your 2 cents worth. My guess is, though, that they wouldn't put him in that situation if they didn't think he could handle it, so I'm sure that that's part of where the disappointment comes from, it, at least his being yanked out of the game like he was. This email comes from Nick, who says, no, I will not be pulling for the Colts this week or any other week unless they are ever in a situation where a win by them benefits the Pats. I don't care if they're undefeated or not by November 4th. I know that you see the Dallas game as having been a bigger test than upcoming Washington. I truly believe that at this point, this Washington team is much more physical than Dallas was 2 weeks ago. The difference, though, Nick, is that Dallas has a vastly better offense than what Washington has. Dallas, Indy, New England, 3 best offenses in the league. Washington isn't even on the same page. I see, says Nick, the secondary with Woodson, Bailey, Taylor being a huge problem. I see the probability of some pretty dirty play in there by Washington. Can Stallworth, Welker be effective on the outside where I believe they will be forced to play? We know Moss can. For sure, Washington will have a good dose of pass interference and unsportsmanlike conduct type penalties. Looks like our wideouts are going to have a rough day. What a time to have issues with the running game. I know that the Pats put up a lot of points against Miami, but the points we allowed with a team like that, the running yards allowed, the inability to get to the quarterback, the embracing tackling, not blocking, as I erroneously stated, against Washington, these points are of great concern to me. I really believe that the Pats need to vastly improve on fundamentals, re the defensive game, and I do mean vastly. We're now facing tougher opponents where a weakness will not so easily overcome. Okay, this must be Coach Belichick writing in disguise, I think, because I think that's exactly what he's been saying this week. We got to do a better job of the fundamentals. So Nick says, go Sox, go Bruins, go Celtics, go Pats. And yes, the music is great. After hearing some of the other broadcasts on this site, you have no idea how much we appreciate your show. Thanks. Thank you very much. We appreciate that, Nick. Gary, there you go. See, a compliment to you, too.
Where's well, he's also killing PFW in progress.
Oh, is that right? Gee, there's a shock, right? Let's see. What else do we have here? We have John. Oh, that's Pratt again. Okay, so that we've said his email. Let's see. Do we have any other? Yes, we do. David, our friend in the Philippines. John, Pat's 42, Skins 10. The only thing that the Redskins' offense is going to break out with this week is some sort of rash. I find baseball pretty boring to watch, but I'm still rooting for the Sox. As a side note, for some reason, ESPN won't broadcast a single NFL game this year here, but every baseball playoff game is on three times a day. Nothing personal against the Colts, but I won't root for any other AFC team except my team. Go Pats. Fair enough. That's odd. You're probably getting ESPN International. It probably has something to do with it. The NFL isn't really seen globally like that, but if the NFL, I'm sure, ever found out about that from ESPN, my guess is they wouldn't be real happy with ESPN as a partner, I'm guessing. Andy in Vermont says, John, glad you asked. My favorite two teams, Red Sox and Patriots. I was born in Stoughton, Mass., lived in Brockton as a kid. Redskins defense might be talented, but they're not seeing the likes of Randy Moss and Tom Brady. And you know, Tom remembers the last time he saw them, he walked off the field with a loss. In no way can I root for the Colts. Although I expect them to win, rooting for the Colts is like rooting for the Yankees. Well, this is why I asked the question today. I'm glad that we had some folks take advantage of the time and give us the answer. This one comes from David in New Hampshire. John, first, I'm a New Englander. Want all of our teams to win. Red Sox, Celtics, Bruins, Revolution, but most of all, Pats. I cheer for whomever is playing against the Colts with as much fervor as I cheer for anyone playing against the Yankees. My prediction for Sunday, mid-30s for the Pats, mid-teens for Washington. Okay. Honesty definitely pays off, David. Thank you. We've had some New Englanders chime in with this one. Kevin writes, when the Pats beat Washington 45-10 this Sunday and the Colts lose to the Panthers 20-17, Tom Brady will beat every team in the NFL, playing 47 games or less than Peyton Manning. Proving again that Brady is better than Manning. And like Tom Brady, I'm a Yankee fan, but I'm also a Giuliani fan. He says, I want the American League to win. Thank you, Kevin. Giuliani. Yeah, that's true. We'll get into that later, I guess, at another time. One more to catch up on here today. Oh, there's the participation report. Thank you, Gary. And as you said, no changes. So that's where we stand as far as the emails are concerned. Thanks, everybody. We appreciate that. Do you still want to go ahead and get off to Bill? Does that work for you?
Sure.
Okay. Then we'll
get about
that.
3 minutes of Bill in
before you get to 4 o'clock.
Oh, we got a lot of late emails.
Okay, yeah. William in Hattiesburg just sent one. Guys, I've been a Patriot and Sox fan for 30 years now. Got to get one in from Mississippi. We don't get too many Patriots fans in Mississippi writing into the show. I know it's not common in Mississippi to be a Patriot and Sox fan, but hey, I love the New England area. My wife and her family are from Wisconsin. Of course, they love the Packers. My poor son is a Saints fan. They're both Braves fans, so it's rewarding after all the years of being a fan to enjoy this decade to the fullest. Go Pats, go Sox, love the show. Send me some tickets. I have some in-laws in Springfield. And William, you'll actually want to stay with them? Thanks for the email. All right, couple of minutes then of Bill Belichick as we wrap up Patriots Playbook for Thursday. Same Pats time, same Pats channel next week, next Tuesday. And you know, of course, what next week is all about, don't you? Yeah, I thought so.
All right, how's it going today? Late last night, Steve? Okay. At least it wasn't extra innings, right?
Right.
far from it.
Of course he will. Are you where you want to be with this team right now as far as preparing for Washington?
Well, we still got plenty of time left, and we'll need to use it.
Yeah.
You know, third down. A good third down team, both sides of the ball. And Randall L's dangerous in the, obviously, in the punt returns. And so, you know, special teams or field goal protection. And that was definitely a problem for Arizona last week. So, you know, a lot of those situational things are, that's part of the Thursday, Friday list of things to do. And so they're important things on it.
How did Richard look yesterday? I mean, I know it's only one practice.
It's one practice, you know. It's a start.
Nice to potentially have a guy of that caliber that you can essentially bring off the bench.
It looks good to have everybody on the field that we have. I wish they were all out there. The ones that are out there, I'm glad are there. The ones that aren't, I wish could be there. And so do they.
How was the defensive line, do you think, played in Richard's absence? So happy with the way everybody's filled in?
I've seen a lot worse. I don't think it's perfect. We've been competitive defensively. There's been some plays that have been, you know, we all like to have back one way or another, you know, as a total defense or individual player or whatever. But there have been some other positive plays. So, I mean, most important thing is just keep working to get better, move forward, and do everything we can to be better, play better team defense. So that's really what the focus is. I don't think it's necessarily about any one position or player. It's about the entire unit performing well. And there's room for improvement on the playing end. There's room for improvement on the coaching end. There's room for improvement playing situational defense. So that's the things we're working on.
When a player's been out as long as Richard has, now that he's out of practice, is he 100%? Or do you have to ease him in? Anyway, or if he's out there at practice, is he?
But, we've got guys that have been out there at practice for over 60 practices, 70 practices. So, I think it would, to think that a guy could not practice and have his teammates be out there for, 3 months, 70 practices, and think that everything's equal. I mean, really. If that was the case, would it be a point having those 70 practices? That being said, I think, when a player comes back, it's because we think he's ready to start practicing, competing at the level that we're doing things. And I think when we make that decision, that's where the player is at that point in time. And then you go from there on a day-to-day basis.
Coach, every coach has their own style. When it comes to Joe Gibbs, do you ever have to worry about trick plays with him?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Joe's, I think offensively they have a good variety of offensive plays. And, they have a lot of different screens. They run reverses. They've run, other gadget-type plays in the past. But I think that, fundamentally they want to execute the plays that are their core plays, and that's what you get the most of, naturally. But, sure, they'll keep you off balance. I don't think they're afraid to, run something if they think it's, got a chance to, to do some damage. Yeah, I don't think they're afraid to run at all, especially you got guys like Moss and Randall L, reverse kind of players, guys that, are good in space with the ball. Absolutely. I think you got to be aware of that.
Well, you mentioned yesterday that Washington's played a lot of cover two. Greg Williams in the past has been a guy that's sent a lot of pressure. Have you seen that this year, or are they kind of departed from that?
They do. They've done both. I think that's one of the dangers of playing. A coach like Greg is, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket.